Thank you very much. Good morning. We are entering into a time of Chesed. We're starting Sefer Bereishis now. Bereishis is the Sefer of the Avos, and the Avos, starting of course with Avraham Avinu, led the way in establishing a nation of Chesed through their actions, through his actions. And the truth is, it goes back to Noach as well. The Teva, there are indications in Chazal that the experience in the Teva that we'll read about this week was a training ground of Chesed, where Noah and his family were forced to provide service and kindness to the animals in order to provide a foundation for the world based on Chesed, based on that type of kindness. So I thought it was a good time to start with a topic of Chesed. And one of the most popular topics within the pantheon of Chesed is the topic of Bikur Cholim. It's a very major theme. There's a lot to talk about. We'll see how much we can cover in the time that we have. But it's one of the major examples of what we talk about when we refer to an obligation of Chesed. When we look to the Torah as a source to tell us what the obligations are, so Chesed as a whole has at least two major sources. On the one hand, we're told, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, love your fellow as yourself. And the Rambam writes in his Mishnah Torah that all of the acts that we do on behalf of others, that's a reflection of the fact that the Torah commands us to love each other, to express acts of kindness towards each other. He says a little bit cryptically that the rabbis came and instituted the formal categories that we have. These categories of Bikur Cholim and of Nichum Avelim, of comforting mourners, of Achnasas Orchim, of hospitality, and the like. All of the famous categories, the subsets. So the Rambam writes that was a rabbinical innovation that they came and they instituted these formal categories. So there's a lot of discussion about why that was necessary, if this all does emanate from the Torah commandment of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, but that's a separate discussion. Whatever it is, that's one major broad source for the obligation of Chesed. And we just finished reading Sefer Dvarim, so in Sefer Dvarim, no fewer than 8 times, as the Chafetz Chaim counts in one of his Sfarim, we have a mandate. It's worded differently each time, but basically 8 times we're told V'halachta Bidrachav, that we are meant to walk in God's path. It's known as the Matatio Dei. And the Talmud tells us, how do you walk in God's path? He has a very different skill set than we do. It means that we should try to imitate His Chesed, that just as God engages in acts of caring for humanity, in the quality of kindness and compassion, so too we seek to emulate those qualities and those actions, so we seek to engage in Chesed as well. So we have these broad sources for an obligation of acting in Chesed. And then when we want to look specifically to Bikur Cholim, we find, if you look in different places in the Talmud, that there are a few additional references or hints that are alluded to. The Talmud says, for example, in Maseches Nedarim, that there is a clue, you have to know where to look, that in Parshas Korach you could find what the Gemara calls a remez, a hint to Bikur Cholim. That when Moshe is facing off with Korach, so Moshe has an expression that if you want to know whether or not I'm qualified to be where I am, if you want to know whether or not the truth is on my side, so we'll see that what's going to happen to these people. Are these enemies of mine, are they going to live a full life? Ufikudas kolish, will they be visited as all people are visited? And the Gemara explains, or the Gemara at least alludes to, and some of the other Sfarim have to explain in a little more detail, what Moshe was saying is that if these people live full lives, so then it means they're gonna live and they'll get old and they'll get sick, and then when they're sick, they'll be visited by people, that's what it means to be sick, and then they'll eventually die, as opposed to being swallowed up by the ground right now. So the Gemara says, you see right away, there's a reference that was taken for granted that if people are sick, they would be visited. And some of the commentaries suggest that this is even more powerful than if the Torah had just expressed it as a straight out mitzvah, because it's taken for granted that this was a practice that the Jewish people always had, that they always visited people who were sick. And then once it was alluded to in Parshas Korach, that gives it extra points as an actual mitzvah, but the reference tells us that this was something that they always did. And then there are a few other references. Again, you have to know where to look. They're not so obvious. But you also find it in the context of Yisro speaking to Moshe, when Yisro gave his advice to Moshe. So we know that Yisro told Moshe that he shouldn't take care of everything by himself. He's going to get exhausted. He should have a court system where there's a hierarchical system, and he's on top and the lower courts are below. And part of that system, Yisro tells Moshe that Moshe should instruct everyone as to the basics of life. Tell them all the basic principles and let the details be handled by the lower courts. So he tells them, "Hodata misaderech yelchu ba v'asamaisa asher yasun." You should tell them the derech that they should walk on. So the Gemara says, what's the derech? What's the path for talking to the Jewish people? That's the derech of Hashem. We said before, v'alachta bedrachav, that is the path of chesed. So the derech is chesed. But then, even more specifically, says the Talmud, derech yelchu ba, the path that you're supposed to walk on, what's the chesed that involves walking? That's Bikur Cholin, visiting the sick. That gets an additional reference, even though chesed as a whole is being highlighted. But within that category, Bikur Cholin is identified especially. And then there are some Midrashim who see that was also alluded to when God speaks about Avraham Avinu. In a few weeks from now, in Parshas Vayera, so we'll read after the visit of the angels to Avraham Avinu, so God says that Avraham is his star pupil, is his prize example of humanity. Ki yadativ, because I know about him, lamana asher yitzave esbanav v'yesbeso acharav, that he will instruct his entire household to follow my path. So says the Medrash, what's the path? Once again, the path is the path of Bikur Cholin, that he's going to engage in chesed, and he's going to engage specifically in visiting the sick. This is a tremendous thing. He's a fantastic person. And the commentaries explain in those last two references, the reference to Yisro and the reference to Avram, that these are not the specific sources for the mitzvah itself, but telling us that this practice, in the case of Moshe, should be instructed to everyone who's around at that time, should be instructed to the entire populace. And in the case of Avram, all the future generations, everyone should know, your family, your household, all the generations to come, should know that this is a key value. So on top of the basic principles of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha and V'Halachta B'Drachav, so we have specific references to Bikur Cholin, and then we possibly have a few more. There are some who include an obligation of Bikur Cholin within the general rubric of the obligation to save lives and to bring healing to people who are sick. Because, as we'll discuss a little bit more, it's assumed that there is a major impact that is had on the patient, a very possibly life-saving impact that takes place when one visits someone. So therefore, if it's a mitzvah to heal and it's a mitzvah to save lives, so then perhaps Bikur Cholin is included in that mitzvah. And one of the contemporary Svarim, there are many fine volumes that came out over the past century on the obligations of Bikur Cholin. So one of them writes that perhaps there's two tiers, that when somebody is in a very dangerous situation and every little bit helps, so then that's included in the mitzvah of saving lives and of bringing healing. And when someone's in a less desperate situation but they need company, so then that's the broader obligation of Bikur Cholin, and we'll talk about those categories a little bit more. We'll just mention one final source before getting into some of the details. So we mentioned at the beginning that there's this principle of the Halachta Bedrachav, of imitating God, that God's paths are considered to be those of chesed and kindness. So we have a specific example of him engaging in Bikur Cholin as well, that we'll read about in a few weeks in the very beginning of Parshas Vayera, that we know that right after Avraham Avinu has his bris milah in the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, so the beginning of the next week's Parsha, we're told that God appears, God visits Avraham Avinu. And the Talmud tells us, in Maseches Bav Metzia, the yeshiva is learning Bav Metzia this year, the Talmud tells us that he came to visit the patient, that here he was recovering from his bris milah. So we're specifically told that God performs this act of visiting the sick. And this is again held up as a model, as the Medrash HaGadol tells us, as a model for us to emulate, that we should engage in that behavior. So we have perhaps too many sources telling us, a whole slew of options telling us that there is a clear obligation to engage in chesed. And in case we need some modeling as to what it means to do acts of chesed, so Bikur Cholin is held up as a particularly representative category, and one that has a whole host of different sources telling us just how necessary it is for now, just how necessary it is for the future, just how necessary it is for here, just for everywhere else, how this is so much part and parcel of our identity as Jews. So what does it mean to be involved in Bikur Cholim, and why is it so important? What exactly is the focus of Bikur Cholim? So you might think, well, I don't have to be told what's so important about Bikur Cholim. Any of us who have been involved in Bikur Cholim, it becomes pretty apparent what we're accomplishing, why we're doing it, but it's still instructive to see some of the details that come out and some of the insights that come out from the discussion about what exactly is the purpose, what is it that we're trying most to accomplish. And a lot of the literature, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and we look in the later literature, so there is a lot that's written, there's a lot that's codified about what the obligation is meant to accomplish, and a lot of it is based on the writings of the Ramban. The Ramban has a sefer called Toras HaAdam, where he writes about the laws of Avelus. Shouldn't come to that. Before that, he talks about the laws of Bikur Cholim and the like, and halachas that surround somebody who's ill, and he lays down in the context of that some of the basic goals and aspirations within the mitzvah, and a lot of that was the basis for what came later. A lot of the later Svarim took up this message as well. So one of the things that he points out is simple companionship, to be there for somebody who is going through a rough time. As we read in this past week's parsha, Lo Tov Heyesodim Levado, it's not good to be alone, especially at a time when somebody is going through something difficult. So simply to be there, for companionship, to be there and be present, that itself is a part of the fulfillment. And some point out that the Ramban, in saying that, the Ramban is l'shitaso, the Ramban is consistent with his comments on Chumash, because the aforementioned visit that Avram gets from God in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, so the Ramban writes that he was there to give him support for having performed the mitzvah of Bris Milah. And they point out, the Talmud already tells us that it was a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, that the purpose of the visit was there to visit the sick. So perhaps the two go together, that even though he was there performing Bikur Cholim means you come and show support, means you show your identification with the patient. So that's what God was doing, Vayera, he was simply being present, so to speak, according to that suggestion. And that itself is the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. Some point out, there's a whole discussion, the Orach Chaim, on the bottom of the page of the Chumash, raises the question of why it is that God visited Avram on the third day after the Bris Milah. The assumption being that the first 2 days are the days of greater danger, that by the third day, the danger has subsided. So one of the contemporary poskim, one of the Dayanim in Belz, Rabbi Gross, in his Tshuvas, he comments on this Orach Chaim. He said that if the visit had been at the dangerous stage, one might think that we only need visitors when somebody is in a critical condition, when somebody is in a very serious, dangerous position, that's when there has to be visitors. But when somebody's past that stage, maybe there isn't such a need for this companionship and support. So God, who's Davka modeling Bikur Cholim, comes specifically at that time. So there is, first and foremost, this aspect of simply being present. And therefore, the Rush had a comment. The Rush was one of the great halachic authorities who commented on the entire Talmud and who set up a halachic code. He's well known for his commentaries in that case. But what's less known is there's also a commentary on the Chumash, very rarely quoted. But there's a commentary called the Hadar Zakenim, which has comments from the Rush on Chumash. So the Rush, at the beginning of the Parshas Vayera, he says that this is a question that often comes up, and it's a good gauge sometimes of how skilled you are at Bikur Cholim. So sometimes we make a big effort to come and visit someone, and the person's asleep. So what do? Do we wake them up so they should see us? So probably not in most cases. But the Rush has a comment over there that if one visits someone and finds that he's asleep, so he's still going to be in fulfillment of Bikur Cholim anyway, if that's the only concern, because the person is eventually going to wake up, and the people who are around, the nurses, the family members, whoever, are going to say that so-and-so came to see you, and he'll feel that comfort and support knowing the person was there, even though they didn't actually interact. He'll still have the knowledge that this person was there. Says the Rush, that itself will be a fulfillment of Bikur Cholim, because that is one of the primary goals. But beyond being there, beyond expressing that companionship and that identification, so there are a number of other specific goals which the Ramban again talks about, and the later Svarim built upon. And included in these goals are, we want to provide benefit to the patient. We want to provide benefit that's both spiritual, supernatural, and practical and natural. So to start with the first, we find a tremendous focus, perhaps it seems like a little bit too much focus, on prayer. And here, this is an interesting idea that we find a very extreme emphasis on prayer. Rav Chaim Kanievsky wrote in one of his svarim, building on what the Rush said, that the Rush had commented, we said a minute ago, that they'll tell the patient after the patient wakes up that the visitor was there. So says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, even if the patient is never told that the visitor is there, it's still a mitzvah, because one of the goals is that the visitor should be inspired to pray on behalf of the patient. So since they'll receive this inspiration anyway, even if the patient isn't told, if the visitor comes and finds the patient asleep, but is inspired to pray on their behalf for that reason, that will also be a fulfillment. So the Ramban has a very strong comment, which the Ramah adopted in the Code of Jewish Law. So the Shulchan Aruch on the Ramah has this line. It sounds a little bit too strong. It says the Ramban that whoever goes and visits a patient and doesn't pray on behalf of that patient is not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that sounds like a very strong sentence. So a person travels for many hours to go visit someone, spends many hours in their presence, travels many hours back, but happens not to pray on their behalf. Would we really say that they're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah? It sounds a little bit too extreme. There is a one comment in the Rishonim that was even more extreme, just while we go through the range of the comments. There was a sefer called the Torah HaMincha that was written by a student of one of the great Rishonim, the Rashba. In the Torah HaMincha, he has essays on the Parsha. So in one of his essays, he says that, as we mentioned before, so one of the major goals we have when we engage in chesed is we want to imitate God. So we want to create personalities that are kind and compassionate, just like God is kind and compassionate. So he writes in his essays over there, the Torah HaMincha, that if you can go to somebody's sickbed, you can go to the side of a patient, and you don't feel inspired at all to beseech on their behalf, you don't feel moved to daven, so it means that you're missing the point completely, and it's better you didn't go in the first place. So that's a more extreme kind of formulation. That's even beyond what the Ramban says. There's a whole range of interpretations trying to figure out what the Ramban is getting at. Hi. Very possibly. We'll get to that in a second in terms of what the form is. That's very possibly the case. But just in terms of, before we get to that, just trying to figure out what is the Ramban getting at? Is it really so extreme that you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah at all? So again, you can get more extreme, like the Torah HaMincha, who said it's better not to even go in the first place. But the Ramban didn't say that much. He said you're not in fulfillment. But that also seems like too much. So the commentaries try to figure out whether maybe there's a softer way to say it. Maybe he means that there is a lack, it's not a perfect fulfillment of the mitzvah, you didn't do enough. Many suggest, although it's a little bit hard to fit with the words, although there are manuscripts that support this interpretation, that maybe there are different mitzvahs. Maybe there's a mitzvah to come, and there's another mitzvah to pray on their behalf. And if you're not going to pray on their behalf, so then you're not fulfilling the additional mitzvah. It's a little bit hard within the words of the Ramban, although there is, it's interesting, the Sefer Charedim that has a listing of the mitzvahs, so he actually has four separate mitzvahs associated with Pikur Cholim. He does list praying on behalf of the patient as a separate mitzvah, so perhaps there is some viability to such a theory. And then there is another statement, there is a contemporary sefer, it became a modern classic on the laws of Avelis, it's called the Pnei Baruch. So the Pnei Baruch also has a volume on the laws of visiting the sick. And the Pnei Baruch, he says that if anyone visits the Chola and doesn't pray on his behalf, he copies the language of the Ramban, but then he softens a little bit, he says, or in other words, he's not there on behalf of the Chola. He's not motivated, worried by the patient's concerns. He's there for some other reason. He's curious, or whatever it is. So then that's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. But if they're there for the patient's interests, so then that's a fulfillment. Doesn't get necessarily as specific that it has to be about davening. So it's a question what exactly that focus is about, but clearly there is this big emphasis. And it's also interesting that we see from the Talmud that there is an atmosphere around the bed of the patient that is similar to a shul, that's similar to a place of davening. The Talmud tells us that the Shekhinah is there, that the Divine Presence is present, and that we should try to dress properly and try to talk respectfully and try to have an awareness that this is an atmosphere that is somewhat similar to a synagogue, somewhat similar to a shul. So then there is a discussion, a whole literature about the question of davening, how that davening should take place. And it's an interesting question because this also takes a little bit of sensitivity. If a person comes and visits somebody who's a little bit ill, and all of a sudden he goes to the corner of the room and starts shuckling away, so then very often the person's going to get very demoralized and think, what's going on? I didn't realize there's something the doctors aren't telling me. So a person has to have the sensitivity to know what's going to be appreciated. There are some patients who are very inspired by seeing visitors praying on their behalf. And there are some who are going to get very scared off by seeing that. So it's a question whether we're talking specifically about prayer that takes place in their presence or prayer that takes place afterwards. That's itself a question. And if it is taking place in their presence, so then the question is what's appropriate. And there is a literature about that, that many do assume that some of the shorter phrases are perhaps appropriate. Hamakom, Yishlach lecha refuah shleima, God should send you healing. Or to say to somebody, many thought that maybe just to say to somebody, refuah shleima, is itself a type of a prayer, and perhaps that's what we're talking about. But afterwards, we have opportunities as well, and we have an addition we can put in Shmona Esrei, in Refa'enu. There's a slot there where we could add people's names. And the Talmud also says in Maseches Bava Basra that there was a practice when somebody was ill to go to a Talmud Chacham who had a yeshiva and ask that Talmud Chacham to pray on behalf of the person. And Mordechai quotes that idea, as the Ramah then quotes the Mordechai, that this led to the practice of the recitation of the Mishnah Berach at the time of the reading of the Torah. That the reading of the Torah is considered to be a time of divine rachamim. Even more so during the week. On Shabbos we have really a more complicated situation because we're not really supposed to engage in personal entreaties on Shabbos. Now Shabbos gets the most attention, but we say, you know, Shabbos simi lizok, it's not really the perfect time for it, but this emerges from this idea that there is a statement in the Talmud that we go to find somebody who has a yeshiva, somebody who has a gathering of people devoted to Torah study and to prayer, and ask them to participate in praying on behalf of the Chola. So this is one of the major aspects, certainly this idea that we should be inspired to ask for mercy on behalf of this patient. That's definitely one of the major things that the Ramban talks about. But there is another major goal as well. And that is that we should seek to be of physical service, that we should seek to see what we can do in order to provide actual benefit and provide for the needs of this person. And that's a suggestion many have. The Aruch HaShulchan, for example, one of the later codes of Jewish law, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that he thinks this is the main purpose, this is the ikar, this is the main reason why we're engaged in Bikur Cholim, in order to be able to provide this service. And he goes on to talk about how some of that service is provided. So many point out that perhaps we should translate the word bikur a little bit differently than we're in the habit of doing. That we translate the word bikur as meaning to visit, but perhaps the word could be translated a little bit differently, that Talmudically and biblically, the word bikur often means to investigate. And that perhaps the idea is that we should investigate into the circumstances of the chola. We should see what exactly is going on, what exactly are their needs, and then we should respond to their needs. We should do what we can in order to be able to be of benefit. Many point out that this is also something that God was displaying. If you follow the whole story, the way the Talmud fills in the lines, the beginning of Parshas Vayera, and Rashi quotes a lot from the comment in the Talmud over there, that here Avraham Avinu was miserable, and God came to visit him and essentially wants to know, what can I do in order to make you happier? Can I bring you something to eat? Can I bring you something to read? And Avram is upset, not because he doesn't have enough to eat or enough to read, but because he himself wants to engage in chesed. That the Talmud says the original plan was that God thought he'd give Avram a break. He made it very hot outside, so nobody should be on the street. Nobody would want to bother him that day. But Avram was upset about that because he wants to engage in chesed. That's what makes him happy. So that's what God, so to speak, learns from the visit. And what happens? All of a sudden, so the three angels show up. So Avram gets his opportunity to engage in chesed. So perhaps this is the model that one of the major components of Bikur Cholim is that you look to see what exactly can be done for this person, and that's a fulfillment of this mitzvah as well. Some of the commentaries point out that in general there's a lot of discussion about what we can learn from God's visit, but some of it's a little bit difficult to attribute to God himself. So for example, we just talked about prayer, so that means that God visited Avram so he could pray on his behalf, or God didn't know what Avram needed. So the commentaries who see it in that way, they say they have to assume that God is modeling Bikur Cholim, even though some of the concepts don't really apply to God himself. While others say that must show you that that's not the purpose, that just being there was the purpose, and that all of these finding out things are not something that God would have to engage in. So that's a question how to interpret what's going on in the Psukim, but the point is true nonetheless that there is an ideal here that we're supposed to try to find out what they need and to try to provide that service. There is a discussion some of the contemporary Sfarim have, it's probably not really going too far, that some say that, well, maybe then, nowadays, since we have hospitals, and the hospitals are staffed with people, so maybe there's less of a need for Bikur Cholim, and the hospital won't let you do all those things anyway, the nurses are going to take care of it. So that's a suggestion some had, it didn't go too far, for a number of reasons. First of all, the premise is probably not true. It's probably not the case that there isn't anything you can do. And also, especially since we see that praying is a major goal anyway, which is separate from all of that, so no one's ready to say that Bikur Cholim doesn't apply. But again, the premise is presumably not true, there's a lot one can do. It's also important to note, as anyone who's experienced with Bikur Cholim can tell you, that if you're not going to be present, so then they're not going to pay as much attention to the patient. That the hospital takes better care of the people who get a lot of visitors, and that itself has a tremendous impact. And therefore, that's enough reason to come, even if you don't do anything, and even if you don't daven on their behalf, you're already going to improve their situation by visiting, by having such a presence. They also point out, that's why there's also a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, if the patient, we talked before about if the patient is asleep, but what if the patient is in a situation where they're not going to be able to perceive what's happening no matter what? Let's say if the person is Rahman al-Islam comatose, or if the person is Nebuch an infant, if you're dealing with somebody who's not going to perceive the visitors, so then one may have thought that there's less of a purpose in Bikur Cholim, and most of the commentaries say it's not true at all, that there is as much of a goal for all of these reasons, and perhaps even more, because the people who are closest to the patient, who are very aware of what's going on, so they need support as well, and that's going to be provided by your presence. That's also a major impact that you can have by being there. In addition to providing these services, in addition to davening, so there are other things that one can do as well, and it's also included in this, the idea that one should engage in conversation with the Chola, that one should speak to the Chola. It's interesting that the Ramban talks about this as well, and Rav Shlomo ibn Gabirol, so he has a poetic rhyming formulation of the mitzvos. So he talks about the mitzvah of tzedakah, and the mitzvah of nichum aveilim, and the mitzvah of bikur cholim, and the way he formulates it, something like, al ha-dalim t'racheim, v'ha-aveilim t'nacheim, v'ha-cholim t'sichem. That we should have compassion on the poor, and that we should comfort the mourners, and those who are ill, we should speak to them. We should engage them in conversation. That's also considered to be important. And the Rambam writes in his, not only in his halachic writings, but also in his medical writings. He wrote books on medicine and books on treating people. Dr. Fred Rosner translated some of them into English. You can read it there. And he writes, you know, the Reader's Digest popularized the phrase, laughter is the best medicine. But the Rambam writes this as well in his Hanhagas HaBrios, that a person is going to feel better if you're going to come and you're going to make jokes, you're going to say something that's going to cheer them up. So that will have a tremendous impact. It's interesting, there is a statement the Gemara has that there's a limitation. This limitation is not really practiced nowadays. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the Talmud says that there was a limitation that one shouldn't come in the first quarter of the day or the last quarter of the day. That if we say we divide the day into 12 hours, one shouldn't come the first 3 hours, the last 3 hours, one should come in the middle 6 hours. And the way it sounds like from the Talmud, and the Vilna Gaon has this statement in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, that it's because we're looking to have an impact on the prayer, that we want to be able to be motivated to daven on their behalf, and therefore we need to have somewhat of an accurate picture of what's going on. So if we come, the assumption was that a person starts off at their strongest in the morning, and then as the day goes on, they have a harder and harder time. So if you're going to come too early in the day, you'll have an overly optimistic picture. If you're going to come too late in the day, you'll have an overly pessimistic picture. So better you should come in the middle of the day, you'll have the most accurate picture, and that will allow you to pray with the most focus. So the Rambam records this halacha, but he has it for a different reason. The Rambam says that it's about the fact that people are taking care of the chola in the beginning of the day and the end of the day. So better you should come in the middle when you're more needed and you're not going to interfere with whatever's going on during that time. So it's a question how to interpret this limitation the Talmud has. It seems to be addressing these two goals, that we want to be able to pray on their behalf and we want to be able to be the most service, the biggest help we can be. So if we come during that time, it'll perhaps be the most effective. So nowadays we don't find that this is an observed idea, especially if a person can only come outside this time. So the contemporaries far and right that this means that we should try to just be aware of when the visits are most appreciated, not to come too late at night, not to come too early in the morning if that's not going to be helpful to the person. If it is helpful, so then we would come then. But some Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld has in one of his tshuvas, is the Rav of the old Yishuv in Yerushalayim, that nowadays the hospitals have visiting hours, so that replaces this whole system. So whatever it is, we should have a sensitivity to when the best time is. It's not necessarily the exact hours that the Talmud talks about, but it reflects this idea that we're trying to be helpful and we're trying to find the optimum time when we can accomplish everything we're trying to accomplish. So this ties in also to one of the very mystical sounding ideas that we find in the Talmud. The Talmud has a little bit of a mysterious statement that if a person goes to visit a chola, so then they take away 1/60th of their illness. So the Talmud says, great, so let's have 60 people come and it'll be over. So it says, no, it doesn't work that way, it's always 1/60th of what's left, so there's still always something there. But there's also an extra requirement, which makes it sound very mysterious, that a person has to be a Ben Gilo. Sounds like it means they are same age, literally, or that they're born under the same sign, which makes it sound very mysterious. And it sounds a little bit more mysterious because I think when you're in elementary school and you learn this, so you only hear that view of the Rishonim who interpret it that way. But it's interesting that there are a lot of other Rishonim who translate it a little bit differently. It sounds a little bit less mysterious, including Rashi, although Rashi in the Maseches Nedarim is probably not Rashi, but the commentary who writes in his handwriting on the inside of the page has this interpretation that Ben Gilo doesn't mean born under the same sign, but it means somebody of the same age group, or as the Meiri and others say, maybe just somebody of the same temperament. And they understand that it means somebody who the person gets along with, somebody who somebody's going to feel a connection, is not going to feel a burden. So when they have the company of this person, that's going to take away from their illness, the fact that they're encountering other people, that's going to give them that support, and that's going to make a big difference. Some of the later Svarim point out, there was an article somebody published in the journal Tchumen a little while ago, that perhaps the idea is also that if we want to be motivated to daven on behalf of the person, so when a person is in the same age group as you, you feel a greater connection to their situation. You feel more like that could be me, and therefore such a person is going to be moved to daven even harder, and that's going to have a greater impact. So that's a detail, but the larger point seems to be that a person is going to feel a connection, and they're going to work even harder, and they're going to do more in order to affect this person's situation. It's interesting, the Rambam records this halacha. The Rambam doesn't talk at all about the Ben Gilo concept. So some suggest that it's because he's working off of a different source, which doesn't mention this at all. And he's just saying that part of the benefit of visiting someone is you have a real effect on their well-being. It's really going to change how they feel, and that's really going to make a difference. Others say he did work off the text that had Ben Gilo, but he related to it differently. He was too rationalist, too non-rationalist, different ways of looking at it, going opposite directions. But they all make the point that we don't have to focus so much on the detail of the Ben Gilo, but the visit itself, if it's a visit that's appreciated, if it's a visit that the person, somebody they relate to and who identifies with them, this has a very real effect on how the person is treated. So the Talmud also tells us that a person should be careful, and a person has to know how to do it right, and that on the one hand, first of all, this sounds like it's a contradictory statement. First, the Talmud says there's no shear, there's no measurement for Bikur Cholim, and some of the interpretations that we find on that statement, that there's no shear, there's no measurement, so there's no minimal measurement. Every little visit counts, no matter how small it is, and there's no maximal measurement. There's no upper limit, even 100 times a day. Even 100 times. That's very hard to understand what that means, 100 times a day. That Tzitz Eliezer has a comment in his Tshuvas. Tzitz Eliezer was a great posek with many, many volumes of Tshuvas, but he also has a volume where he focuses specifically on medical matters. He, in general, focused a lot on medical matters. He was a posek of a hospital. But he writes there that this means the idea of 100 times a day doesn't necessarily mean that you have to come really 100 times a day, but that you should be aware that things can change on a dime, things can change very quickly, and you should never say, well, I was there this morning, I'm Yotze, I already checked in today, I don't have to worry anymore. You should recognize that this is a situation that needs constant attention. But in general, the 100 times a day is a little bit counterbalanced by the fact that we also do find that the Rambam tells us that we have to be careful not to be a burden on the Chola. And some of the commentaries said, well, that's obvious. I think we know that if the whole point is that we're there to help, so then we should take it for granted that we shouldn't be a burden. So the truth is, first of all, it's not always so obvious. It always helps to have this pointed out. But some wanted to suggest that perhaps what the Rambam was saying is that it's such a concern, you shouldn't be a burden on the patient, that even if you're objectively helpful, but you're a burden at the same time, that's going to undermine the fulfillment. And it's interesting, the Rambam, when he formulates how the visit should take place, in Hilchos Avil, he talks a little bit about how the visit should take place, and he includes in his formulation, you go and you do the visit, v'yotze, and then you leave. So why does he have to tell you that you leave? Every other mitzvah he tells you what happens after the mitzvah, so you do this mitzvah, and then you have a snack later. He doesn't tell you what happens after the end of every other mitzvah. So how come when he talks about Bikur Cholim, at the end he says, V'yotze? So the Brisker Rav commented, probably half seriously, half joking, that people have to realize that's also a part of the mitzvah. You should also know that knowing when to leave is as important as coming in the first place. And the Ksav Sofer was quoted as having said, I think he actually heard this from Baron Rothschild, he quoted it in his name, that we mentioned at the very beginning that one of the sources for Bikur Cholim was the advice that Yisro gave to Moshe. He said, V'odata mesaderech yelchuba, you should know the path that you should go on. And this is also indicated in the indication of the mitzvah itself. You should know when to go. You should know when to leave. That's also a part of a mitzvah. So that's a little bit hard to reconcile with the idea of going 100 times a day. So you should go 100 times a day. Chances are you're probably going to end up being a burden if you go 100 times a day. So how exactly do you manage that? So it could be, one could suggest a little bit homiletically, but maybe it's correct. It's interesting, you find the expression 100 times elsewhere. And the Talmud says in Maseches Yevamos, there is an obligation, the Torah says, that if somebody's doing the wrong thing, you're supposed to give them tochacha, you're supposed to give them musar. So the Gemara has a statement that one should rebuke somebody who's doing the wrong thing even 100 times. And the problem is, that seems to directly contradict another statement the Talmud has. The Talmud says, in the context of Musar, that if something is not going to be well received, you shouldn't be saying it. If it's a davar she'eino nishma, you shouldn't say it. So it sounds like the person didn't receive it well the first 99 times. So how come you haven't gotten the lesson yet? So Rav Bakshi Daron, who was the chief rabbi, the Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel, he has in his halachic responsa that the idea of 100 times doesn't mean that you should necessarily say it 100 times. It's a statement of the style. It's saying that you should say things in such a way that even if you said it 100 times, it would still be well received. That it's not going to get annoying, but you could say it again and again and again, it's always going to be taken well. So we could suggest that it means the same thing in the context of Bikur Cholim, that you should have the first visit in such a way that if you're going to have that same visit 100 times a day, the person's never going to get annoyed with you, they're never going to be frustrated, they're always going to be happy to see that you're coming again and again, they're always going to have that positive impact. So all of that is contained in some of the sensitivity that we're told to have. And this is an important principle. The Aruch HaShulchan, the earliest Sfarim, write that a person who's engaged in Bikur Cholim has to be a Zahir, a Chacham, and a Maven, somebody who's careful, somebody who's wise, and somebody who's understanding, because they have to be able to recognize all of these cues and all of these signs. They tell a story about the Chassidish Rebbe who was sick, and one of his Chassidim called him up probably late at night and said, Rebbe, I want to come visit. And the Rebbe said, it's late at night, I don't need to visit right now. And the Chassid said, no, I want to come, I really want to come. And the Rebbe said, thank you, but I really don't want you to come right now. And the Chassid said, no, I want to come, I want to fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And the Rebbe said, I'm not a lulav. thank you very much. I'm not your mitzvah object for you to pick up and do as you please. It's not that type of a mitzvah. So if we're not going to be accomplishing anything, so that's a part of the sensitivity that has to be brought into play when we talk about Bikur Cholim. So you also point out, the Shulchan Aruch says there is also a little bit of a progression. The Shulchan Aruch says that if somebody is, takes sick, God forbid, so then the people who are close, the family members and close friends, they can come visit right away, but somebody who's not so close shouldn't come to visit within the first 3 days. And after 3 days, then they can start to visit. And it seems to be, if you come too soon, so you're going to create this image in their minds that they're sicker than they are. So this is all a part of the sensitivity. This is all a part of the awareness that is called into play. That could also change with the nature of the illness, but it's a basic guideline. It's a basic instruction of what type of sensitivity is required in order to realize how you can be most effective. So it's interesting. One of the discussions that you find in terms of Bikur Cholim, and it comes up also in a very similar way, but a little bit different in the context of Nichum Avelim, is the question of the telephone. There are a lot of tshuvas that were written. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, very prominently, and many, many others, wrote tshuvas discussing the question of whether one fulfills the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim through the telephone. And part of the reason why there's so many tshuvas about it, if you look at them carefully, you'll see that they were all asked by the same person. The same person wrote a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and wrote a letter to the Menachas Yitzchak, and wrote a letter to the Yonasan Steif, wrote a letter to a lot of great poskim saying, what's the story with Bikur? Sorry? Well, he wanted to get, he generated a lot of valuable literature that, so we're grateful to him. He wrote a lot of, so we have a great legacy because of that, but there's a lot of tshuvas written about this question, and most of them say the same kind of thing, with some exceptions. But most of them say that it's somewhere in the middle, that it's really not ideal, that it's not really what we mean when we talk about Bikur Cholim, and at the same time, it's clearly better than nothing. And, so if you can't do anything, so better to call than to not interact at all, but if you can come, better to come than to rely on the phone call. The Menachas Yitzchak has a slight variation, and he comments on what we said before, about 100 times a day. So he says, you only have to come once a day. The other 99 you can do on the phone. You know, the follow-up visits you can do on the phone. It doesn't also have to be actually 99, but there should be one visit at least in person, and then other visits can be on the phone. So this idea, this kind of middle road, is a common approach many take, and there are some outliers. You know, there are some who felt that there really is something very lacking if you don't actually come in person. Some assume that's actually a different spin on why the Torah uses the word yelchu, that you should go. The Maharsha comments like that, that it's a mitzvah that means you actually go somewhere, you actually are present. And others were concerned that maybe some of the goals are not going to be fully fulfilled, and maybe it's going to be an imposition on the cholah. They're going to have to come to the phone. They may not be ready to come to the phone. They may not be ready to talk on the phone. They may not be up to it. And there were some concerns that some poskim had that it wasn't so ideal. And on the other hand, there were those who thought the opposite, who thought that maybe it's especially ideal, that you're saving the person from having to interact with you in a longer, more personal way. And if the idea is that you're supposed to find out what is going on, so then perhaps you can do that over the phone. Not everyone agreed that you can do that as effectively over the phone, but some felt that maybe this is a way that you can find out what's going on and you can accomplish providing whatever services you can provide, or davening, or doing whatever you need to do. Rav Huttner has that in his letters. It's interesting, this question, as I mentioned, was discussed both in the context of Bikur Cholim and also Nichum Avelim. Rav Huttner was the one who took a split attitude towards the two. He said that when it comes to Bikur Cholim, he thinks Bikur Cholim can be performed 100% over the phone. Not that it's b'di'evit, but that it's a perfect fulfillment over the phone. But Nichum Avelim, he held, could be done 0% over the phone. That Nichum Avelim, the whole nature is that you're supposed to be present and sitting around the Avel, and that was a unique stance. Most poskim held on both issues somewhere in the middle, and there were some outliers here. Rav Huttner had this extreme position that Bikur Cholim 100% yes, and Nichum Avelim 0% yes. It was an interesting spin. But they reflect different goals, that there are a lot of shared goals between the two mitzvahs, and there are a lot of differences, and that's how you sometimes get some interesting perspective. There's also a discussion before phones were invented. So you have letters. So what about sending a letter to the chola? So a letter has some things that are accomplished and some things that are not accomplished. It is an expression of support. It's an expression of companionship. It gives them something to do and to feel connected to. But it's usually not a way to get immediate feedback. It's not a way to express your actual physical presence, so it also seems to fall short. It's an interesting question if nowadays we have email and they perhaps could respond immediately if they're in a position to do so, or they could respond to a text message immediately if they are able to do so. So would that perhaps shift things a little bit? Do you indeed get some level of immediate feedback? Maybe it's better than a letter was once upon a time. That's an interesting question. There's also a discussion that's brought up. What about the principle of shlichus? So sometimes in halacha we find that you can't necessarily, if you're in a position where you can't do the mitzvah yourself, so you can appoint someone else as your agent, as your shliach, to do it on your behalf. So the shlichus work for the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So one of the poskim about 100 years ago, the Avnei Shalom or Tamashov, who considered this question, he said it doesn't make sense when it comes to Bikur Cholim. When it comes to other mitzvahs, you have a discrete goal you need to accomplish, you can ask someone else to accomplish that goal on your behalf. But if the idea is that you're supposed to be present for the Cholah, so the Shliach is going to fulfill it. You're not going to fulfill it, so it's nice that you send somebody there. That person will be in fulfillment, and the person who sent them is not going to directly be fulfilling this mitzvah. There was a response to him that was written by Rabbi Traub, who wrote the Tshuvas Avnei Yaakov, so he understood it a little bit differently. He says you have to consider the question how it works. Normally you have a mitzvah that can be done through shlichus, so you could have 10 people who could ask one person to do something on all of their behalves, and that would work on behalf of all of them. Here, it's more based on what the actual impact is. So let's say you have one guy who's going to go visit their classmate who's sick. So the other 10 classmates say, okay, we appoint you as shliach, you should go on our behalf. So will the patient really see it as if 11 people came and visited him? So probably not. So maybe he'll see it a little bit more when he mentions, oh, by the way, the other 10 people are thinking about you. It'll be a little bit more. It won't be the same as if they all actually came. So it's all going to be based on whatever the impact is, whatever actual effect it has on the person to have all these people come. That's what's going to be accomplished. And we should look at the question that way. There was an interesting statement that Rav Achaigon had, which no one could figure out what exactly he was getting at. Rav Achaigon was one of the late Gaonim, means he lived right before the Rishonim, lived around the year 900 or so. And when he talks about the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, Rav Achaigon says a person who's going to visit the Cholah should bring somebody else with him. And it's not clear where he gets that from. The Rugachev Gaon had a suggestion that this was based on Yosef in Parshas Vayechi, when Yosef is told that his father Yaakov was ill, so Yosef goes to visit him, he brings his sons along with him. So Rugachev thought maybe this was the source for the Chaigon's comment. It's difficult, because presumably he did that because it was his grandfather, and it was Chinuch, so it's hard to say this is a principle in general, that you should bring somebody with you. So they all try to figure out, what is Rav Achaigon getting at when he says that you should bring somebody with? So some suggest that if the idea is that one visitor is going to take away some of the illness, so presumably if you can get other people coming too, that'll take away even more. Rav Asher Weiss, in his Sefer, he suggests that the idea is that if you have an idea that you want to daven on behalf of the cholah, so sometimes we have the mentality there's basically two types of tefillah. There is a communal tefillah with a minyan, that's a tefillah satzibur, and then anything short of that is a tefillah sayachid, is considered to be individual prayer. So he quotes from Rav Mordechai Benet, who was one of the great gaonim of the 18th century, that that's not necessarily true. There's an in-between category as well, that any time you have more than one person davening, so that's called tefillah harabim, that's called a prayer of the many. It's not the same thing as tefillah hatzibur. It's not a communal prayer, but it is a prayer of many, and therefore the more people who are involved, the better it is. So if one person is going to go and pray on their behalf, so if you bring somebody else with, they're also going to pray on this person's behalf, so that's also going to be an additional benefit. So it could be that's what Rav Achaigon is getting at. Many don't quote this idea. It's a little bit of an obscure idea, and often it's indicated to do the opposite, that often it may make more sense to go by yourself, because especially if you want to be able to have conversations with the cholah, sometimes it's a little bit inhibiting if other people are around, and also you want to try to be there when the person needs the company the most. So it seems to make more sense. You want to stagger things a little bit more rather than to have everybody coming at the same time. But it's interesting what can be gleaned from that comment of Rav Achaigon. It possibly has some relevance. We'll just mention one more point before we run out of time. Hi. I'm sorry? It's an important question. It is it is discussed in the literature. The question is, appropriate for a man to visit a woman and vice versa? So that's also, so in terms of yichud, that's also an important consideration. So there are a couple of issues that are relevant. So first of all, that is an important question, which is a little bit dependent on communal standards of interaction, which also plays a role in some of how that question is addressed. The short answer is yes. The short answer is, assuming that everybody is appropriately dressed and everybody is comfortable in their level of exposure, then theoretically the answer is yes. Sometimes there may be certain propriety concerns that are taken into account. And it's also worth mentioning, as you're asking it, there's some people who are in a condition that they don't want to be visited by anybody, that they don't want to be visited because of the nature of their condition makes them feel exposed no matter who's going to come. And if that's the case, that's also a part of the sensitivity that we need to have. I don't know if we had a chance to address that so much. But it's important to be aware, in both cases, whether it's a male-female issue or whether it's an anybody issue, that as we've seen in terms of some of these emphases on Bikur Cholim, that on the one hand it's crucially important to be aware of when not to come or when to leave, but at the same time, those times when we're not supposed to come, we're not off the hook, because there's so much else that we could be doing as well in terms of praying, in terms of trying to provide service, in terms of trying to be helpful in all kinds of other ways that don't involve our physical presence. So when the circumstances are such that it's not indicated for us to be physically in the same room, so then it doesn't exempt us from caring. There are all kinds of other ways in which we can fulfill the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. There's a beautiful sefer that came out a few years ago called Mitzvah Bikur Cholim, written by Rabbi Farbstein. He writes that the underlying principle out of all the different suggestions of the Ramban and everybody else who came after him, the underlying principle in everything is that we try to be of benefit to the cholim. Anything that's of benefit to people who are ill is a fulfillment of Bikur Cholim. So therefore, donating money to the hospital is also a fulfillment of Bikur Cholim. Anything that you do that's going to help people who are ill be supported and feel better is a fulfillment of the broad mandate of Bikur Cholim. It makes sense to say that we are obligated to do the maximum that we can do in regards to any specific individual and our own abilities, but less than that as well. Anything that we do that provides benefit and service to a chola is considered to be a fulfillment of Bikur Cholim. So sometimes it's not indicated. Theoretically, it is possible for a male to visit a female and vice versa, depending on how it's arranged. But even when it's not, or even when the whole visit is counterindicated, there is still much that we can do to fulfill the concept of Bikur Cholim. Mitzvah Bikur Cholim. It's easy to remember. Right, so that's in Hebrew, yeah. It's a very fine sefer. Just to mention one more point, because we're just about out of time, but there is an interesting discussion, there's a debate in the Talmud between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about whether Bikur Cholim and also Nicham Avelim should be done on Shabbos. Nicham Avelim, the Ashkenazi practice, is not to have Shiva calls on Shabbos, although I think the Sephardim do, but we're going to focus for a moment on Bikur Cholim. So it's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and the conclusion, it's not clear who the conclusion is siding with, but there is a statement that Bekoshi Hitiru, that with difficulty we allowed it, that we do allow it, but there's some reluctance. So it's not clear exactly how that lies and how what exactly the reluctance is. There is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch called the Shari Tshuva, where the Shari Tshuva says that if a person is very sensitive and by visiting the Chola they're going to become so distressed and become so anguished that it's going to destroy their own Shabbos, so then that person shouldn't go to the Chola. But the Tzitz Eliezer got very upset about that, and the Tzitz Eliezer said, no, that's the whole point. The whole point of visiting the Chola is that you are going to identify, it is going to affect your own Shabbos, and nonetheless, that's why we had a whole debate about it in the Talmud. We weren't sure if it was a good idea or not. And nonetheless, our conclusion was that the value of visiting the Chola and worrying about their needs is more important than preserving your own Shabbos. So as much as we do want to try to hold on to our own Shabbos, and as much as it was discussion in the first place, nonetheless, the value of Bikur Cholim is such a tremendous paramount that we tell you to do it anyway. So then there's some discussion as to who this applies to, and it basically comes out that it applies to everyone, because there are those who say that if a person can only go on Shabbos, a person is at work all week and the only time they can visit is Shabbos, so then they should rather go on Shabbos rather than not go at all. And if a person is going every day, then for sure they should go on Shabbos also. So the only person who shouldn't go, a person who could go any day and happens to choose Shabbos, then maybe Shabbos is not the best day. So that's a rare category. So basically, anyone who can only go on Shabbos, or anyone who goes every time including Shabbos, basically most people should come and visit on Shabbos as well. And they recognize that, yes, that doesn't mean they should hold back in their identity identification with the Chola. That's what the whole mitzvah is about, but recognize that as important as their Onik Shabbos is. So, and in terms of the tefillah, that Shabbos Yimilizok, it's a time when we're hesitant to engage in such entreaties, but nonetheless, this is such an important value that we involve ourselves in it on Shabbos as well. Okay, so we're almost out of time. Let's just quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there are, you could review over there as well, that there are some whole slew of sources as to what the obligation of Bikur Cholim is, that either it's a obligation that comes from a general mandate of Chesed, loving your neighbor and imitating God, a few specific psukim which direct us particularly to Bikur Cholim. Then we talked a little bit about what the purpose of Bikur Cholim is, the Ramban having laid the groundwork for much of the literature about this, the idea of companionship, the idea of being present, that itself is a fulfillment, therefore even if they're not awake, but somebody will tell them later, it's considered to be a mitzvah. And then we talked about the tremendous emphasis on prayer. The Ramban says you're not in fulfillment if you don't daven. We talked about various interpretations of what that meant, and various ways of softening that statement, but the clear focus that's put on praying on somebody's behalf. And then we talked about some of the ramifications of that and some of the different ways to do it, and the fact that we also find a tremendous emphasis on providing service and benefit for the person. Perhaps that's what Bikur actually should be translated as. And we talked about how some of the ways in which we try to maximize the opportunity both to pray effectively and to be present, and also to engage in conversation and in joke making and whatever else is helpful. We talked about the Talmud's various limitations in terms of the timing of the day, in terms of the timing and the process of the illness, how that factors in. We talked about the idea of 100 times a day without being too much of a burden, how we balance those two ideas together, the idea of the awareness of knowing when to leave, knowing when not to come in the first place, how all of that factors into the equation. We talked about the mysterious Ben Gilo, what that means, that a person of a certain nature can visit someone and take away a 60th of their illness, how that plays into the whole equation. And then we talked about some of the side questions, the question of using the telephone, how that was interpreted differently by different poskim, the question of taking somebody along with you, this idea that the Shiltas has talked about, the question of what to do if it's counterindicated to actually come in person, and how to try to do what we can in order to accomplish all the other goals. And then we just mentioned in closing this discussion about whether to take place on Shabbos or not, and the conclusion of the Talmud that we should visit Cholim on Shabbos even if it's with some reluctance, the comment to the Shari Tshuva that you shouldn't go if you're going to get too anguished, and the opposing comment to the Tzitz Eliezer that no, the whole point is you should feel connection and identity with what's going on, even though we're concerned about our own Shabbos. That's why we had a question about it in the first place. But the value that comes from this tremendous chesed is so core to our identity and is so paramount that we undertake it even under those conditions. Thank you so much for your time. It should be a wonderful day. It should be only good things and only good health. Thank you.